Okay. Yeah.
I might have had it out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It might have got covered up later. But if it's there, you know, if it's at the house.
If
it's at the house, it's definitely fine.
Don't worry about it.
I'm worried about it, Jim. It's a very, very important pet.
Well, Ray, I understand what you're saying. If it's there, you get it back.
I know, I'm just hoping it's there. I'm hoping I didn't lose it.
Oh, my
keys. Right there on your table.
This song is going to be an original to open up the meeting. I mean, not my original, but my original that I haven't played here before. I hope. I do have the poetry, like I said, but I have about three or four songs eventually. Raise your request, I brought it along. I know you can probably start with a study, you know, it's a lot of this stuff of music.
Yeah, you said that. You said it was song problems.
I don't mind other guys dancing with my girl. That's fine. I know them all pretty well. But I know sometimes I must get out. Where the kids are all right, the kids are all right.
Basically, the business part, to dispense with it briefly, is there's a sentiment, a desire to have a meeting up in Boston, and it seems like a good idea, and there's a place called Jacob Wirth, which seems like a good place to have it, if
have
they're amenable.
Do we have a second?
So basically, it'll be at the end of June.
We can double it as a going away market.
Yeah, that's sort of an idea. Yeah, so basically, it's going to be one of the last weekends in June. And bottom line is that on or around the time of the next meeting, which will be the last weekend in April, I'm going to decide whether we're going to do it. And I'm going to decide it based on the number of firm commitments I've received from people. Are there any holidays at the end of June? Are there any?
No, just July 4th.
Okay, so Okay, so basically.
Yeah, Memorial Day, which is the last Monday.
Yeah, so basically it's going to be the last Saturday in June. The last Saturday in June. Whatever date that may be. Last Saturday in June. And I'm going to decide whether we're going to actually do it based upon the number of firm commitments I've received between now and next meeting.
You know,
what?
Mine is firm.
Yeah.
I give you a firm commitment.
So, everybody has a month to think about it and contact me one way or another and let me know. I'm going to decide based upon the number of commitments, based upon my sense of the vibe of the place, if I broach it to one of the bartenders or the owner. There's one barman there who recognizes me when I come in, but we've never really talked much. But they do have something that is kind of rowdy and musical. On Friday nights, they have a sing-along. There's an old piano there. And they have a sing-along on Friday nights. This guy named Mel something shows up. He brings along a bunch of songbooks. He hands them out to people who are sitting at the tables near the piano. And they have a sing-along from about 8 till midnight. And also, it's right near the theater district in Boston, so I guess they're used to kind of more flamboyant, strange things happening. I think that to make it work, I don't know. The thing of it is to make it work there is denying people who would not be able to... It would be denying some people the possibility of coming who would not be able to do it, essentially. Some people would not be able to break away to come to Boston, whereas New Britain, since most of the people who come are from Connecticut, is always much more accessible. So if I decide to do it in June, it essentially means that some people are going to be left out. They can't, like, show up at the last minute as some people do, or decide that day if they're in the mood for a meeting or not.
Yeah, but if you get it right down to it, like, not any time in the trip.
No, but what I'm saying is that tonight we're here. If someone knows that they want to come, but let's say they have a commitment like Jerry does till 9 o'clock at his job, He knows where the meeting is. He knows you just have to drive from Bristol to Britain. Okay, well, this is a different deal. This is a deal that requires commitment on the part of the people who say they are going to come.
Right.
And it also involves something that I'm not thrilled with, which is the idea that people who come by here, sometimes people come by just for a little while, like Ron or someone, would probably be opted out of it. Just because, you know, if they can only come by here for an hour, they're probably not going to be able to make a whole weekend in Boston.
True.
So I have to have enough commitments to justify that. And I imagine that'll be at least 6 people. And once the people have committed, if anybody backs out in a last-minute kind of way, they would incur my eternal wrath and just should not
just
be a path to my door in
just
soon.
Have to be dead with God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, I don't want to turn it into some kind of negative thing. It's just that, you know, I'm bringing up now, it's been something that's been suggested to me. I'm tentatively with it, but I don't have a lot of confidence in the idea right now actually happening. It certainly makes it more convenient for me just to take the train to Chinatown than it does taking a frickin' bus down here. But my convenience is not really a priority. The priority is having a good meeting. No, the party gets harder.
Oh, the party. Starving in Spain, there's hurricanes in Florida, and Texas needs rain. The whole world is festering with unhappy souls. The French hate the Germans hate the Poles, Italians hate Yugoslavs, South Africans hate the Dutch. And I don't like anybody very much. We can be thankful and tranquil and kind and proud. For man's been endowed with a mushroom-shaped cloud. And we can be certain that some lovely day someone will set the spark off, and we will all be blown away. Just a little interlude.
Yeah, that's good.
That's by the Kingston Trio.
I thought it was. That had their kind of style. Their kind
a long
of,
time ago.
Just to sum briefly, the story's called Not Fade Away, and after a lot of stuff that nobody understand, I started reading the story, in which Rich essentially is in a bookstore cafe in Chicago on North Michigan Avenue, which is the fashionable part of the city, kind of the downtown. And he wrote a letter to his girlfriend Franny, asking her not to hang in there with him. And he wrote a letter to Rebecca, telling her that to keep something from the world, because the world will try to get everything from you, and you've got to have something that you won't let them take. And, so that's pretty much what has happened thus far. A lot of babble that caused Jim to utter, "Where are we?" And then a couple of letters. Okay, six. And I lost a very important pad somewhere, though it may not be permanently lost. It may only be temporarily lost.
Bus station. Lost
in it's in the bus station and lost
people
your phone.
Are reading it.
People are reading it. I don't care if they read it as long as they give it back to me. Anyway, okay. But I'm going to buck up for the purposes of this moment, since here we are. Kill myself later. Six. He spent many nights with Ronnie Pascal in Ronnie's van, nicknamed Guitarnival. He felt safest in this van, whose interior walls were covered with mounted guitars, whose exterior one side depicted a healthy inferno in which it appeared to be plunging, and whose other side showed the van in the act of emerging from these same flames, or perhaps others. Art courtesy of Rebecca, and I don't know, maybe this is why he felt safe in it. Ronnie's van was equipped with enough sound equipment to shame some small studios. Its stereo, when turned volume even mildly high, gripped the interior and danced inside one's organs. Easy to hook up electric guitars, too. Record some music, maybe. Strange acoustics, though. Really? And stranger Americas within. They listened to music for hours, Rich and Ronnie, settled among cushions, Rich sipping a beer, perhaps a dozen, smoking a thin cigar, if not a joint. They listened. Rich would pass out at 3 or 4 in the morning, and Ronnie would drive them back into the city from whatever bit of forest or hills or wherever they'd been. They didn't talk much in the van. They listened to the music, which cupped and jiggled them. Ronnie and Rich each had remote controls to control the volume, to record, to change easily among radio, tape deck, phonograph, CD player. Play that. What, Rich? Sorry. Run Through the Jungle. Play its tune. Same key? Play it, Ronnie. Play it through and vary the second time through, speed, key, whatever. Then play it the original way again, listening to what you did, and then once more to modify your first variation. So Pascal did this, and Rich listened, but with no comment. Older than Americus, a far better, more accomplished musician, Ron still listened and obeyed. He knew Rich was searching for something in the song, some feeling, some thought, but he couldn't play well enough himself to find it. He relied on Ronnie for this, who in turn relied on Rich to motivate him for a search he was otherwise often too content to pursue. Ronnie loved to play. Blissful, he did it for a living, but Rich wanted more. You could be a great guitarist, Rich. You're him. I don't need to be him. Do I give you what you want when I play? What you're looking for? You're fine, Ronnie. Listen. Gray is the band's balls. The women are its challenge to the audience to make them want more. I'm its dreamer. I'm its cloud. You, Pascal, you are its music. We're all its music, aren't we? No, let's go outside. Two men left the van, dark and silent, and climbed onto its roof. Pulled back the plastic covering to expose a long cushioned pad, set back on their elbows on top of the van. Ronnie had taken them quite a ways north of Chicago onto even thinner, rougher roads until he was sure their presence and especially their loud music would rouse no one. A vast, flat field. No street lamps. The night sky was naked of cloud and almost noisy in its spatter of stars. That's what I wanted us to play. That's what I want you to play. I can't play that, Rich. You can. The men faced each other, barely two pairs of eyes in the burnt blood night. I have heard us, our band, playing the cosmos in my dreams. Ronnie, I wake up and I can still hear the music. Rich paused, almost choking, he for a scatter of words to come together and convey his meaning. You know this tour can only mean so much to me. Yeah, not much. No, it's good for us to play, said Rich. Touring. Getting to it. And then beyond it. Silence. Ronnie, would you play if you had but one guitar and 2 nickels in your pocket? Of course. So would I. What are you getting at? Ronnie, I don't think I'll ever tour again. I'm doing this because it is penultimate to what I want to do. What? Ronnie's voice eager, feeling privy to his laconic friend's briefly exposed soul. Rich opened his mouth to speak, but didn't. Finally he said, I don't know yet. I'm just hopeful it will come. That's all. Suddenly tense, Americus leaped off the van's roof and into the van. Before Ronnie could respond or whatever he might do to all this, the van's stereo was clutching it with pounding rock music. Cosmos Factory from Creedence Clearwater Revival. Do, 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 looking out my back door. 7. She walked around this city, this northern city, and tried to discover herself in it somewhere. For goodness sake, Francis, here you are, hard upon 22 years old, and you still don't know what you're about. She looked at her young friend Rebecca, newly 16 years old, daughter of her boyfriend Rich, and thought, I'm younger than her. She's known her path in this world since she was a baby, and I'm still unsure. Hoping that going to school would help, she had nonetheless brought every doubt about this endeavor with her into the classroom. Many doubts. No one in her family had ever finished college. Her brothers Michael and Stevie, older than her, had done okay without it. What is it, Francis? Even he's a college dropout. I'll tell you what it is. You're a creature of pleasure. You like singing, but are not a singer. You like books, but aren't a student. You're not even much of a lover. Look here, I grew up in a small town in Georgia, far enough from Atlanta to make it a rare visit. I learned how to drive a pickup and shoot a rifle by the time I was 16. Boyfriends have always come easy, and I haven't been so picky. I moved up here on a whim. 8. Franny's times in Berlin before the fall were spent in the far more subterranean places than Rebecca. They worked together at the Arcadia bookstore, but often parted at quitting time. Why can't I go with you? Rebbe, it's not right. Some of the people I know... Why do you go with them? If they're so bad, stay with me. I know good people around here. Look, baby, your daddy and I have some troubles right now, but they're nothing compared to... Fine, Franny. Go to your bad, dumb friends. I'm sorry. You're unhappy. You should be with me and people who love you. My dad loves you. Do you think he would want me to let you go to these bad people? She'd mollify Rebecca one way or another and leave. Where she was bound wasn't all that bad, but she knew Rich wasn't fooling around about that girl. Besides, maybe Rebecca would let slip a word and he'd come questioning. 9. I want you to come with me, she says quietly. Who? You. You. Meaning me. She's talking, Franny in the story is talking to me now.
To Ray.
Yeah. I don't think Americus would appreciate your keeping my company so often, Franny. 2 stinging purple eyes in my face. She says, he's in Chicago, you're here. I need a friend. Pause. All treacly, she says, y'all coming, honey? A speakeasy hash joint, I guess you'd call it. How Franny joined its membership, I can't say. Someone I know was in places like this in Amsterdam recently, I say, friendly, helpful. Franny covers my mouth with her hand. Annoyed, though still playful, I lick her fingers. It's hard to be led round by her long blonde hair, tight jeans, ass, tits, mouth, all brightly young, fictional, his. His. You writing dirty things about me again, she demands. I nod, but firmly withhold my notebook. Be my friend. Again, she hard in my face. We may get somewhere together. We're not doing it alone, she says. I nod. The scene unfolds. 10. Hear me howling all around your... I can't do it.
Sorry.
It's, it's from Sticky Fingers.
Sticky Fingers.
Well, just imagine a Rolling Stones song. Jagger and Richards bending and knowing, 2 big trees in a storm-drenched forest leading the Stones through a carnal jam from 1971's Sticky Fingers LP. Now this is a hash joint somewhere in the city. That's not Sticky Fingers. Some other. There are several rooms in what's essentially a basement apartment. Lights are low and few while smoke is heavy. Tobacco, marijuana, hashish. I see a lot of hair, meaning me, I'm in this scene, as it were. It's hot, too, and so a lot of flesh. Looking for a beer, I'm handed a nice metal pipe by a figure who keeps moving. Franny and I stop our careen forward and share some smoke. She sucks on the pipe like it was a finger. Sinks back into a wall, onto a cushion. Half onto it as she descends, I offer a soccer kick to position it well. Works okay. Pulls me to next to her. We pass more smoke. Where is this going, she finally says. I don't know. Tell me. Okay, I'll try. Eleven. Creation is the first and most supreme act in the universe. Art, in which a created being proceeds to create, is mortality's trespass into immortality's sphere. I hold that the moment of artistic creation briefly introduces a bridge to the unknowable places of forever. It's our hint, our clue, our piece to a puzzle whose full picture we may never see. We will never see. I read to her from one of my notebooks. Maybe the one I lost. I am receding from the scene. Can't you see, Sister Morphine, I'm trying to score. Is the music in the air. She tries to grab me, but I continue to evaporate. Don't leave, she says, wounded. Franny, I don't know what you'll get at this place. It's fun. That's about all. It's the 60s, she says. No, it's just a scraping, a notch above fantasy. Ask yourself, would Americus come here?
Thank you.
like a croissant with syrup and a box. He's a feeling of angel and the cure of the king to the lock.
Rich Americus' last full day in Chicago discovered him at dawn on a park bench, sipping from a bottle of Wild Turkey whiskey, Cecil Gray at his side. They drunk the night through, neither wanting it to end, not for the competition like their old days, but for its preciousness, its rareness in these later, lesser days. "You almost have me convinced these days suck more than the old ones," Gray mutters. Their little park remains in shadow past sunrise because of so many tall buildings around it. Sun thieves its way in slowly. "Gray, there's no present for me, only past and future. The past is where my joys and tragedies are. The future is where I'm finally going to do with all of them. What I'm finally going to do with all of them. What's now? Here?" "Obligation." Balding, a swath of leather and scarves, Gray sucks face from the bottle. "No fun touring no more, mate." "It's not that simple. We have to do this. I recognize it. Not touring was totaling us. It became a disease. No, a limp. A curable limp. Is it cured?" "No, not here. Here we blew out a few doors and sharpened up." "Frisco?" "No." "Where? Bloody Connecticut?" "Yes." Gray twists around on the bench, shucking off the roughing winds, making sure his vitals are all tucked away. America's leather jacket and black t-shirt, jeans, boots, sits still, waits. "What is it, Gray?" "It? The road is fun, you brain-dead fucker. I've got a prep school choice of groupies, 1,000 bars to get tossed from, my band together and fucking playing. You're not overachieving at fatherhood or failing as lover man out here. I get the girls who will settle, the ones who just want you to scare my old member." "Yeah. Do you help them with their homework after you're done? Make sure they're home by curfew?" "Americus, you're not listening. You're listening to the bleeding ocean again." Americus blinks, takes a pull of whiskey. "It's what all you artists do. Listen to the ocean. Think it's talking just to you. Think it wants you to reply." "There's no ocean in Chicago, Gray." "No, but we're heading for one, aren't we? We just come from another. Balls to all that, anyway. It's in your head, is my point." "You're getting damn philosophical for a hoary old punk drummer." Gray stands, kills the bottle save a sip, hands it back to Americus, begins walking off. "See you in Lululand, Shagger. We're all going by van." "Not you. You'll get on the train. See the mountains, the desert. All the symbols keep you going till the Pacific." 5. Thinking he might sleep away the morning, Americus returned to his hotel room, the one he shared with Gray. A guitar, a notebook, a small satchel of clothes. Toss into bed. Fuck it all for a while. Discover instead of peace sheets of paper, a note from Stephanie. It says, "Rich, I wanted you to see these so you'll know Chicago hasn't been a bust for us. One is by your old friend who I guess has drawn duty chronicling your adventures across country. You're good for copy anyway. Love, Stephanie Torme, vocals, keyboard, noisy children. One story, clipped from a local arts rag, Chicagoland Cafe, read this story from a magazine with the title, Noisy Children's Children's Children. And the article reads, at the Ephemera Pub on North Michigan, a small phenomenon has been happening these past few weeks. A Connecticut rock band, Noisy Children, led by Richie Americus, has developed a worshipful following verging upon cult status. Blah, blah, blah. Album titles, misspellings. They misspelled Cecil Gray's name. Pseudo-musical blather near bad is the author of these tales. Was there a point? Yes, here it was. The article resumes. Neither a relic from the 60s itself, nor a derivative idolizer of those strange days, Noisy Children extend the proposition that the death of the 60s has been greatly exaggerated. What if you could make music that ignored all music past 1974, save for a renewing strain of early punk, about when it had its first nasty wet dream? End quote. I think Mark said he brought it. Would you bring a couple poems, Mark?
Yeah. Irish Gaelic for fairy lover. And it begins, why is there a sadness in your smile, glee in your tears, your denim which whirs like silk, lace heavy as leather? Snowflake kisses vanishing on the skin lead me down to drown. Hold your life preserver. I will sink, I will swim, as you stand on the rocks beneath the winter barren oak. Branches in your hair, ice in your ears, only your pale eyes to see, only your tongue to lament. If our souls were hidden inside trees, where would yours secret itself? A bonsai or Dutch elm? That weeping willow in the schoolyard? Or the redwood far away in antediluvian? I shall climb your soul, rest in a bough, nail it to your bark and build a treehouse. I shall fill your pulp, know your roots, consume your fruits, and recline in the shade of your broad leaves. I cannot augur my welcome. Today I am spring, carrying warmth and bright flowers, cool river strolls and the scent of summer. Tomorrow you see me as autumn, colors kaleidoscoping before they sink to the ground. Winter winds beckoning from distant hills. We swing like Foucault's pendulum in a circle. This ambivalence must end, yours and mine. Take my hand, I'll lead you into arctic darkness. Take my hand, and let pain settle in ever-sinking currents. Take my hand, lead me into solstice sunlight. Take my hand, and allow scars to fade. Take my hand, I'll lead you into this moment. Take my hand, and bring forth silence, unveiling action. Let us join hands and lead each other. Let us join hands. Second poem is entitled Prose Poem, and the majority of it was actually written here, which is actually
precious.
as says entitled prose poem. Listen to my style and rationalizations as each one changes in the air between us, changing in form and substance and shadow, changing into granite, spat out of an antediluvian pluton, rough cut New Hampshire quarry, now floated the length of New England, to be shaped square and solid by mason crafters and set in place between us, a wall I cannot cross. Hear my silent fears as each one changes in the air between us, tumbling and falling, buoyant in sullied atmosphere, no too exactly like they crystallize, pointed white, sparkling and beautiful, settling above the tree line into fern, and then plastically the glacier flows into the spot across from me, across from you, snowblind, we cannot see each other's eyes or pass these sapphian glances. Edmund Hillary-like, I should climb this Everest, or find a track, a pass to trek swiftly, not be trapped by the Donner Party, or better yet, set off a fertilizer bomb, create a gap to stroll through. But today I'll sit watching geography grow between us, feet, yards, miles, light years, parsecs, distance expanding along natural logarithm, stars spinning about Polaris. I'll stay on my side of eternity and hope that next time tonight will end differently. This is entitled Fowl. I've seen my foul-tongued beauty again, her hair, the tangled synergy of the void before the Big Bang. She comes to me late, when you're asleep. So late Hubble's constant has cooled the wavelength or two. A Doppler-shifted bounce carries her to me. Blue jean geometry of taut flesh catches my eye, will not release me. And the ponytailed smile of her conquest cheers me. I feel content, as lust masquerades as love, and she cannot suss the difference, or cares not to. She is as foul as the truth. The worm-turned peat of the earth, ice-crusted snow on Reykjavik streets, the sun setting in a field of heather. I sink beneath her tepid, darkling gaze and drink amply from the peppery broth of her stare. Yes, I like that one. This one's entitled Siren. S-I-R-E-N. In a corner of the classroom she sits, twisting her hair around her finger. Spinning tan into gold, I watch. My eyes drawn, like aurora borealis to the poles, drawn to the firm softness of her sweater, the swelling of the blue tide with the moon's breath. I'll not be tied to the deadwood mast. I'll know the song a siren sings, the woman sings. Across the long library table we sit close, four eyes on the black litter words of the text. I'm learning her scent like a dog, imprinting to find her spore in heat or in hunt, on the beach or across the ocean's waves. I know the song a siren sings, a woman sings. Her tongue slides along red lips, washing away ill-chosen words. Her phrases have pierced my four humors. She has sutured and mended and scarred. Physician, hear thyself, and the words I hear. I've known the song a siren sings, this woman sings. The siren is a taloned harpy, is a mermaid with pale blue eyes, is lovely and is deadly. A safe current flows twixt the reefs of discord. A siren sings the way to the current and the rocks. A siren sings. She sings to me. And this is the most recent, though I'm not sure if it's the final version yet, but it's what I have so far. It's called Freedom Comes Easily, but with sadness. Freedom comes easy. Freedom from is freedom to. Freedom to be as I would. Freedom to be what I would. You are costly. Costing my easy freedom. Freedom comes easy, but with sadness.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
But that doesn't change matters. Losing the Whalers is a terrible blow. Losing the new arena is a terrible blow. That facility wasn't only about the Whalers. It was about 150 more nights of memories a year. The arena was our future. Mayor Mike is the man. He refuses to go to the Whalers' last few games. I'm not going to... Okay. He says he's hissed, but I know what he was going to write. He's pissed, and he's showing it. Senate President Pro Tem, I don't give a wake over this. I don't want to wake over this. Sullivan is a publicity-seeking schlep. Governor John G. Rowland, he wouldn't know Gordie Howe if he were flattened by one of his elbows. Peter Kamanos, I refuse to speak to him for the rest of his life. He killed the dream, our dream. Do I sound angry? Good. You aren't going to get me to say losing the Whalers is fine. It stinks, and thousands of people agree with me. For them, the Whalers are a way of life. Births and deaths were matched with Ronnie Francis and Kevin Dean. Weddings and funerals were marked with playoff epics. They became our own mileposts. I missed my old man's last breath, but I saw the whalers die Wednesday. It's a damn shame.